With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Fact Hunter Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fact Hunter Radio Network. Here is your host, George Hobbs.
Hello, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had time to unwind, spend it with the family. And today, I hope you enjoyed the latest episode of Bill Cooper's Mystery Babylon series as we played hour number 33 from January of 1994. Today, we're going to take a little bit of time and go back and talking about the political prisoners who are highlighted by our good friend Rudy Davis of IHateTheFBI.com and YearOfJubilee.com. Today, again, Jeffrey Winehouse is who we will be focusing on. Back in August of 2012, he wrote a story about the local corruption that in his neck of the woods in Missouri. And on September 11th, 2012, he was shot four times by a police deputy. And he survived. But on top of that, he ended up, he is one-third of his way through a 30-year sentence. So we're going to bring you the story, and then we have a few audio clips to play for you. This story is from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, The Voice of Truth. It's October 10th, 2018. Listen to this. September 11th, 2012, Jeffrey Winehouse makes a trip to a remote gas station to an arranged meeting with law enforcement officials to have his printing press and equipment returned to him. 13 seconds after Winehouse steps out of the car, he is shot four times in the head and the chest. He did have a weapon holstered on his side, but he never drew it. Winehouse is now wrongly serving a 30-year prison sentence for assault on a law enforcement officer. The officer who shot him, Sergeant Henry James Folsom of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, testified in trial that Winehouse pulled his gun. Therefore, he had to shoot him. There was overwhelming evidence at the time of the trial to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Winehouse was innocent. His attorney, as well as the prosecutor, did not enter that evidence into trial. And as we cover all these stories and you read through all these American political prisoners on YearOfJubilee.com and IHateTheFBI.com, they have a lot of similarities in their stories, especially, shockingly, that even the defense attorneys are pressured into setting these guys up for failure. It's unbelievable. And it goes on to say that the entire thing was even captured on a secret spy watch video. He was denied due process and adequate counsel and was falsely convicted. His crime was exposing government corruption. For a decade before he was shot, he was an active member in his community with strong voice in local political corruption and advocated standing up for constitutional rights. He produced a political newsletter and videos under the name of Bulletin Man, challenging corruption and trying to build a better community. Many local businesses showed their support for him by running ads in his newsletter and stocking copies to distribute to patrons. In the summer of 2012, Mr. Winehouse ran an ad in the local paper asking for information on corrupt officials and activities. He got over 200 responses. They were all stored on his computers, which, along with the other equipment he used to produce his literature, were essentially his printing press. Now, During this time, he was running for county coroner in an attempt to open up two old cases that he had reason to believe carried some dark implications. The county coroner has the power to arrest and even to replace the county sheriff if necessary when illegal activities are uncovered. That's really interesting. So fast forward to August 16th, 2012. Winehouse released a video urging corrupt local officials to change their ways or step down. Now, his outspoken views did not sit well with some. August 22nd, 2012, two Missouri State Highway Patrol officers, Sergeant Henry Folsom and Corporal Scott Mertens, were sent to find Winehouse and feel out his intentions in the video, as well as his level of threat to himself or others. They spoke with Winehouse outside of his home office about the video. He explained his political platform and intentions in making it. He was pushing for reform to broken systems and corruption, not advocating for violence. Sergeant Folsom asked if Winehouse would surrender his printing press and equipment so they could look them over. With his equipment being his livelihood as a journalist, and because his platform was pushing for enforcement of constitutional laws and rights, he knew that it was against the law for them to take his equipment without a subpoena. It was also a violation of his Fourth Amendment constitutional right. Quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, he knew that they were not complying with the law, so he simply refused. When Winehouse refused to hand over his equipment, Sergeant Folsom claimed that he smelled marijuana. However, his partner, Corporal Mertens, testified that he did not smell anything. That is a very important detail to pay attention to. Winehouse's defense lawyer at his trial did not challenge this claim. If a drug dog expert had been called as a witness, they could have testified that not even a trained dog could have smelled marijuana from that distance, let alone a human. This would have proven that it was an invented claim to gain access to the equipment. Folsom informed Winehouse that he was going to leave and get a drug search warrant. 4 hours later, he returned with the warrant. During that time, Winehouse was handcuffed and detained in the front yard. They always make a spectacle out of it. The front yard, not the backyard. Or in a room, right? It's unbelievable when you give people a costume and a badge how corrupt people can be, right? The power trips. And we know that people in power should be held to a higher level of accountability, but they're not. When Folsom returned, he served the warrant alone. He left the corporal behind. To serve a search warrant, Folsom required to notify the local sheriff and have them present. He testified that he had not been able to contact the local sheriff. His story later changed, claiming that he did not have a cell phone service there to contact them. There are procedures to be followed in that instance, but of course they were not. The law does not make an exception. Winehouse's lawyer did not challenge in court as to why Folsom went ahead and served the warrant illegally. There were deputies from the sheriff's department present at the trial that could have testified to the fact that they would have been more than willing to assist in the search warrant if they had been notified. They were called to the stand by Winehouse's lawyer, but it was objected to prosecuting attorney Robert Parks, and the objection was sustained by the judge. They were not allowed to speak on Mr. Winehouse's behalf. So you're starting to see how rigged this game indeed was, right? During the search, they found a minuscule amount of marijuana and a prescription pill in the basement. No matter what your bias is, the marijuana and pill found were inconsequential and irrelevant. If a drug dog expert had been called to testify, it had been proven that Folsom had invented the claim to gain entry. Without basis for a legitimate search warrant, entering the home became an illegal act, compounded by the fact it was served illegally without representative from the local sheriff's department. While they were there, can you guess what they took? That's right. His printing press and his equipment. They did not have a subpoena, which is required by law. They only had a fraudulently obtained and illegally served warrant. A couple weeks later, September 11th, 2012, Sergeant Folsom calls Winehouse to let him know that he's been ordered to give back the equipment. He assured Winehouse that he's not going to arrest him. So Folsom arranged a meeting at a local gas station, which is, all this is so weird. Why would, if he went to his house and took it, why would he not deliver it straight back to him? That's, all of this is just, you know, and of course, listen, Winehouse made some mistakes on his part too. Should have had people present with him at that point, right? Anyway, he assured Winehouse that he's not going to arrest him. Folsom arranged the meeting at a local gas station. When you get your property back after a seizure, it is standard procedure to go to a police station and sign a receipt for your merchandise. Okay, so there you go. This meeting was held at a gas station in a rural location in St. Clair, Missouri, that was open for business and populated with citizens. Now, several officers testified in trial, including the shooting officer, that this was a ruse to arrest Winehouse for a warrant that they had obtained for the marijuana and the pill. Again, this is more illegal activities by the police. They had also obtained a warrant for tampering with judicial officials stemming from the video, which had already been cleared as free speech at this point by federal review. The reason for this initial visit to Winehouse's home was to gauge if he was a threat. If they still had any reservations about him becoming dangerous or planning an elaborate ruse to arresting him at a public uncontrolled gas station with citizens and workers, it simply points to negligence and deviation from procedure that did, in fact, put the public at great risk. It also left one man in critical condition with four bullet holes. Jeff did not trust the situation and tried to get a pastor with him to go as a witness. He was unable to do so and went alone. Okay, so he did try. He was wearing a spy watch, which was recording everything and sending it to his children's mother. September 11th, 2012, Winehouse gets out of his car and had his gun holstered, as he always does. Sorry if you guys can hear that. The fields down the street are getting sprayed by the airplane. So if you could hear that, it's flying directly over my house. September 11, 2012, Winehouse gets out of his car and has a gun holstered, as he always does, strapped backwards on his left hip. His seatbelt made that the only position he could wear his holster in. Now, Corporal Mertens had the trunk pop to support the ruse that they were returning the equipment. Sergeant Folsom asks him, why does he have a gun? Winehouse simply remarks that he is allowed to carry one. The Second Amendment, Article 1, Section 23, clearly states that the right of citizens to bear arms shall not be questioned. Sergeant Folsom and Corporal Mertens would both later testify that at this point, Winehouse unstrapped his holster and began to draw his gun. They claim that he was instructed by Sergeant Folsom to remove his hand from his gun. That was before they knew about the existence of the spy watch video, where you can clearly hear the conversation. Any mention of Winehouse touching or even motioning for his weapon is blatantly missing. The video, witness testimonies, and two FBI that were present during the incidents can all confirm that Winehouse never even touched his holster. Sergeant Folsom later changed his story to say that he didn't have time to tell him to remove his hand. Sergeant Folsom then orders Winehouse to the ground, followed by shooting Winehouse once in the head, twice in the chest, and then again in the head. In the trial, Folsom claimed that Winehouse had pulled his gun and said, "You're going to have to shoot me, man." If you listen to the video, you can clearly hear Winehouse say, "You don't got to shoot me, man." Folsom claimed in court that Winehouse said, "You're going to have to shoot me, man." And that's 50-50. I've heard the video. It's I think it can be dictated either way. But a trained audio-video expert, according to this report, confirmed that Winehouse did in fact say that "You don't got to shoot me, man." No expert was called in trial to challenge what he said. Once again, the defense was taking a flop. One even went to Winehouse's lawyer, Mr. Eastwood's office, the day before the trial. He insisted on being summoned to testify as audio-video expert. He was refused. This potential witness had originally set the spy watch to go live when it was recording that day. His testimony would have proven invaluable to the defense. The best piece of evidence that existed to exonerate Mr. Winehouse, explained by the expert who set it up, would have been the only tool needed to refute every claim made by the prosecution. Not one witness was called. Now, Folsom also claims that the gun was holstered on Winehouse's right hip and that he unlatched the holster and drew his weapon. He claimed that he had no choice but to fire his weapon. The audio-video expert would also have been able to refute this with a still shot. When he said, quote, "You're going to have to shoot me, man," and started to exit that gun from the holster and remove it, and in that posture, "I had no choice but to fire." That was according to Officer Folsom. He said, "I pushed him over on the left side where I could see the holster on his right side and the gun, and I'm standing directly above him." Now, again, Corporal Mertens also testifies to the fact that Mr. Winehouse was wearing his holster on his right hip. Quote, "Okay, so where was the holster on Jeff?" Quote, "It wasn't on his hip. It was on the front side on the right." Both of those testimonies have been proven to be a lie. A still shot that had been isolated at the time of the trial clearly shows a reflection of Mr. Winehouse walking past the car with his holster on his left hip. This shot, as well as the FBI statements, are very clear proof that Sergeant Folsom and Corporal Mertens lied about which side Winehouse wore his holster on. This still shot was not entered into the trial. A parachute retention holster, which is the holster that Winehouse used, is not designed to be a quick draw weapon. It would have made it extremely difficult, if not impossible, for Winehouse to unholster his gun and draw it in the short amount of time he would have had to do so. Adding to that, the fact that the holster was backwards on his left hip and that Mr. Winehouse is right-handed. The FBI agents present swore in their deposition that Winehouse did not attempt to draw his gun and that the holster was not on his right side, as claimed by Sergeant Folsom as his reason for shooting Winehouse. There were, however, not called into trial to testify on Winehouse's behalf. FBI agent Marischuk stated in his deposition, quote, "You saw a little more of his right side. Yes, his right hip. Did you see a holster? No. Did you see a gun? No." FBI agent Cunningham, who was asked by Folsom to help serve the warrant, stated in his deposition that he never even saw a gun. Quote, "I just remember him standing with his hands in front, and there's a conversation going on between Sergeant Folsom and Jeffrey Winehouse. And then seconds later, I see Sergeant Folsom. He puts up his right hand and then steps back, and then shots were fired." You say, "Sergeant, seconds later." That was seconds after Jeffrey stopped. "A time frame I couldn't. It happened really quick. I couldn't tell you how many seconds. When he stops, there's a conversation taking place. Jeffrey Winehouse has his hands in front. Again, the conversation takes place. And that's when Sergeant Folsom raises his right hand, draws his weapon, steps back, then to the left, and then shots fired." And then asked what happened to Jeff after the shots were fired. The agent said he fell to the ground. The FBI agent also verifies that Jeffrey Winehouse did not pull his gun. Again, did you ever see a gun before the shots rang out? No, I did not. Before the shots rang out, did you even see a holster? No, I did not. Did you ever see any moments by the hands up or down? I did not. I remember seeing the hands in front. Not only this fulsome claim that Winehouse drew his weapon and that it was on the right side, which has been proven a lie, but he also fully admits to executing purposeful kill shots instead of simply trying to incapacitate him if, in fact, he had posed a threat. Quote, "At that point when I fired my weapon, you know, the totality of the circumstances hit me at the point when I actually saw that he had showed up armed and was actually drawing a gun out of the holster. I don't know if those other people were involved, and to be honest, I was already looking past him and trying to scan to see if there were any more people back there that were threats. And when I first pulled my gun out, I fired two in the chest, and I saw both of them hit. He had a lime, like a lime green shirt, and I saw both of those rounds hit. And on the way up, I fired one to his head, and I saw it hit his head. Let me stop you there, sir. Where were you aiming? Just chest and head. I fired purposely, fired two into the chest and one into the head." Now, Folsom has claimed that Winehouse pulled a gun and he was forced to shoot. He also acknowledges that there are citizens around in an uncontrolled atmosphere with two highway patrol troopers firing their weapon in public. Sergeant Mertens, who's Folsom's partner, fired off a couple shots as well. None hit Winehouse, but two hit the building with cashiers inside, as well as customers. This all could have been avoided if protocol had been followed by having Winehouse go to the police station to sign for his equipment. Folsom and Mertens claim that Winehouse pulled a gun is proven false by video evidence, FBI, and yes, witness testimony that were not made available to the jury in trial. Their claim that Winehouse's gun was holstered on his right side has also been proven wrong by the video, including still shots and, again, FBI agent statements. Folsom claimed that he holstered Jeff's gun where he pulled it out from under him. Quote, "And I rolled him over. I see the gun there. I just reached down, grabbing the gun, and shove it in the holster that was right there." If Folsom had admitted that the gun was in the holster when he removed it from Winehouse, it would have proved that it was not possible for him to have drawn his gun. He would have had to return the gun to the holster after he was falling to the ground while being shot four times. The claim that the gun was out of the holster when Winehouse was shot was proven wrong by FBI agent Marischak, who stated this when first asked if he saw the gun or holster. Quote, "Sergeant Folsom was in the process of removing it from underneath Winehouse's body. When I made the approach, I had no idea a weapon had been involved. At that point, gun, I've got it. I got to get it removed. He tries to get it out of his hand and underneath Winehouse's body. At that point, I see an olive drab holster and a weapon inside of it." Once again, Folsom's version of the story has been proven untrue, but the jury did not hear that testimony of the FBI agents. If the gun was still in the holster when it was pulled from under Winehouse's body, he could not have drawn it. It is as simple as that. He's in prison because two men, the man who shot him and his partner, maintained their lies throughout the entire trial. The testimony of the two Missouri State troopers, Sergeant Folsom and Corporal Merton, is backed up only by their word alone, which contradicts every other single person present's version of the events, as well as video and audio evidence. There was no investigation into the actions of Sergeant Folsom and Corporal Merton in the shooting by the Sheriff's Department, the FBI, or any other agency. It was all done in the house. They were investigated by their peers. And police, we've talked about this many times, A lot of Freemasonry involved in the higher levels of police force, and they don't roll on their brothers. They don't. A chilling dispatch call was recorded catching the head of the highway patrol and the dispatcher saying, quote, "Yeah, there's supposed to be a Jeffrey Winehouse guy. Are you familiar with the name? Oh, no. They're messing with him again? Maybe he learned his lesson this time." And of course, that was not played in trial either. There were men working on the gas station's gutters at the time. One witness states very clearly and emphatically that Winehouse did not have a gun in his hands when he was shot, and that he believes it was a setup for murder. He states there was no attempt to help Winehouse on the scene, and within 30 seconds, the parking lot was swarming with officers. The shooter had his hands taped and immediately left and did not return. Another witness verified that Jeff did not have a gun in his hands at any time. Both of these witnesses and the two FBI agents verified that Winehouse had not pulled his gun. FBI agents that were present during the shooting were in courtroom ready, willing, and able to testify, but again, they were not called. After hearing their depositions, Robert Parks, the prosecuting attorney in the case, removed them from the witness list. Winehouse's lawyer did not call them to the stand. Again, it was rigged, both sides. One of the bullets that entered Winehouse's temple and came out of his forehead. This is believed to be the last shot that struck him, leaving a bullet in the ground next to where his head fell. No crime scene team was brought in to investigate the shooting, and no expert was brought to trial to show that the bullet was fired into his head when he was on his way to the ground after already being disabled by the three previous kill shots. It can still be proven easily after the fact by watching the video. You can see the sergeant's hands positioning as he shoots. The angle of his gun to his body and the angle of the gun's path through Winehouse's skull proves it was a kill shot while he was already twisting on the way down from the three previous purposeful shots to the chest and head. Sergeant Folsom stated in his deposition, quote, "I fired two into his chest and one into his head, and I immediately started scanning left. I knew that I had to eliminate him as a threat. I saw his eyes roll up in his head, and it was just the whites of his eyes that were showing. When the first two rounds hit him, he was just kind of standing there almost like he was in amazement. And then I saw his eyes roll up in his head. I could still see Jeff's got his hand on the gun, and I heard a shot go off, and he just started to rotate. I just chose my sight, went back to his head, I squeezed the trigger again, and he was already starting to rotate and fall. He fell, and he fell violently. I mean, he collapsed on his face, and he just piled up." Sergeant Folsom admitted that he fired the last shot after he acknowledged that the three previous kill shots had already taken Winehouse down, and he was able to see the whites of his eyes, and at that point, he made the choice to shoot him again in the head and to make a shot that rips through his temple and out of his forehead as he is pivoting towards the ground. This is full admittance that the last shot fired from Sergeant Folsom's gun was intended to kill. Because of a video made calling out corruption, certain people took offense. An illegal search and seizure led to a dangerous situation to everyone involved, including the innocent civilians at the gas station that day. It was all just to serve a warrant to someone who would have willingly walked into the police station and turned himself in if needed. This then led to Winehouse being flown to a hospital, barely alive, with four kill shots in his body. Listen, I've seen the pictures, and you can see them too. You just look at the Rudy Davis's site. That'll be linked in the show description. It's amazing this guy survived. But the evidence has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Winehouse is innocent. His crime, just like many other people, look at Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, so on and so forth, his crime was exposing government corruption. His house was raided, his computers were stolen, and he was shot when he went to retrieve them. He was brought up on tampering charges for the video, along with the assault charges that landed him in prison. But they were dropped as unfounded. The entire reason they started this process didn't even hold up in court. But the assault charge stuck, and he never touched his gun. He is in prison for 30 years for armed criminal action and assaulting Sergeant Folsom by shooting him. And he never touched his gun. He's been in jail for 10 years, just spent his 10-year anniversary. The only evidence, or since the shooting, I should say, the only evidence against this man is the words of the man who shot him and his partner. Overwhelming evidence proves he is innocent. Sergeant Folsom didn't even try to hide the fact that he was shooting to kill, not incapacitate. The witnesses were terrified. They were screaming. They saw a plainclothed man shoot another man right in front of them. Bullets were hitting the building. Nobody that was there, other than the shooter and his partner, claimed that Winehouse pulled his gun. They simply refuted it. They were convinced, as you heard, as you will hear in this testimony I'm going to play for you, that they witnessed an execution. Nothing more, nothing less. None of this was necessary. Witnesses also report that there was no effort to make help to Winehouse at the scene to stop the bleeding. It took the ambulance 8 minutes to get there, and they just basically let him lay there and bleed until the ambulance showed up. He was eventually flown in critical condition to the hospital and is alive today only by the power of God. Mr. Winehouse had a video camera in his car recording that day. It could have shed an entirely different light on what happened. The video has not been seen or heard of since. Its existence is not acknowledged by the Missouri State Highway Patrol or the Franklin County Sheriff's Department. Another incident that was not explored in trial was the fact that Sergeant Henry James Folsom, the shooting officer, was involved in a previous altercation where he shot and killed someone on duty under questionable circumstances. This was not the first time this officer has shot somebody. The judge did not allow the jury to have any information about the previous shooting and the previous death. At trial, Winehouse was forced to wear 80,000 volt shock cuffs, even though the court did not have the authority to use them in the situation. A judge in Maryland was actually convicted for doing the same thing. From prison, a good friend was recording phone calls from Mr. Winehouse to upload online so he could tell his story, as well as deliver uplifting messages to those at home who missed him. February 22, 2018, Winehouse was served a cease and desist order forbidding him from having his voice recorded and put on the internet. If he chooses to exercise his freedom of speech, he will face solitary confinement, loss of any privileges, including email, phone calls, and visits. On April 26, 2018, he mailed out a letter entitled "Reasons Why I Am Innocent" to his friend who posted the letter online. The decision to silence Winehouse, even now from prison, has been taken as far as serving him on May 2, 2018, with a conduct violation of the silence order for the letter being put online. The violation report cited that he created a disturbance. He was placed in solitary confinement, and he was stripped of his privileges. He has been silenced from telling his side of the story. Mr. Winehouse was shot in an attempt to silence his voice. It didn't work. He lived. They silenced him in court with shock cuffs, and they silenced him from prison. But the facts do speak. You just have to listen. They speak of an innocent man gunned down after being subjected to unlawful procedure by the police through the entire encounter. And an article ran in the Washington Missourian on October 12, 2013. Folsom talks about how the shooting ruined his life. He claims that post-traumatic stress and not feeling as though his department stood behind him after the shooting. He wasn't fired after nearly killing two people. That would have been a second person, right? He took a voluntary extended sick leave. He made no mention of concern or regret for what happened that day, or for the three decades that were stolen from Jeffrey Winehouse's and his children. He actually placed all of the blame squarely on Winehouse's soldiers. Quote, I lost the ability to feed my children because one man decided he was going to start a revolution. So I've got some audio to play for you. The first one is Jeffrey Winehouse, the real story from my eyes.
Jeffrey Winehouse, the journalist that was shot twice in the head and twice in the chest by the Missouri State Highway Patrol in 2012 in St. Clair, Missouri. There's a lot out there about Jeffrey. People from all across the country have done very extensive research on his case, and he's already been proven innocent over and over and over again by a simple Google search, and you can see all the evidence that has been done. I want to give you a different perspective, something from the eyes of somebody from where Jeffrey was shot, from where Jeffrey lived, from where Jeffrey did what he did that caused him to be in the situation that he's in right now. I am from Franklin County, Missouri. That is the county where Jeffrey was brought up on false charges and convicted to a 30-year prison sentence, where he sits in Bontier, Missouri today. I actually find myself right now standing in the same place Jeffrey was when he was shot. There's a gap between good and evil, and a lot of people like to turn their head and pretend like that's not there because it's not a comfortable place to even be standing next to. But in any group of people, if left unchecked, there will be some that rise too high within themselves. And that balance of power takes over to something that becomes harmful to other people if left unchecked. And a lot of times it does boil down to citizens that are willing to stand up against it and demand change and demand accountability. And that is what I have been doing for the last several months. And I find myself many times standing in that gap and knowing that there's a target on my back because of it. And I want to give you Jeffrey's story from my eyes, being somebody who is now standing where he stood, so that you can see it from Jeffrey's eyes. Now, Jeffrey was shot four times in 2012, and there's been a lot of stuff that's been written in the paper about it, been on the news. Jeffrey's been painted to be a menace that is better off where he is because he was a danger to society. It's all malarkey. Jeffrey, like I am now, stood in that gap. He lived in that gap, and he thrived off of that gap, and he did it because he knew that he had to be that voice and that responsibility, that checking of balance and power. There's been extensive research done on Jeffrey's case from people all across the country, and I'm not going to get into his entire story. There's not enough time on one video. A simple Google search, and you can see all the information that's out there. But I'm going to skip to right before he was shot. And Jeffrey was a journalist. He put out a newsletter that he called The Bulletin. Shortly before he was shot, he put an ad in this newsletter asking for tips on local government corruption, and he received about 200 responses back that were all stored on his computer. Shortly after that, he received a knock on his door from Sergeant Henry James Folsom from the Missouri State Highway Patrol. This man was supposedly sent out to gauge if Jeffrey was a threat or not. It's interesting to note here, and this is something that people don't normally talk about, that Troop C is the troop of the Highway Patrol that would be in charge of Franklin County. And it was not Troop C that came, it was Troop I, which is a completely different jurisdiction, and they didn't even really have the authority to be there in the first place. And I just wanted to point that out, because that's something not a lot of people catch on to. They didn't even have the authority to even talk to him in the first place, but they come and they want to talk to Jeffrey. They talk to him about a half an hour sitting outside in the front yard. But 30 minutes later, they ask him if they can see his computers, and he tells them no. So they leave, and they're going to get a search warrant for Jeffrey's computers, who they go through several judges looking for, and they finally bring one back. They take Jeffrey's computers. You know that that was their intention the entire time, and now that you know what Jeffrey ran an ad for, it doesn't take much to figure out what they were after. They take his computers, and Jeffrey files many pieces of paper and makes many phone calls trying to get his computers back. Finally, he is victorious. He gets the phone call that he's going to have his computers returned. He's finally won. He exposed what was happening. They came in, they took his computers, and now they're returning them. Jeffrey, in his mind at this point, is victorious. But what they want to do is they don't want to meet him at the police station, which is the standard procedure. When you get any confiscated items back, you meet at the police station, you get it from the receptionist or whoever is there, you sign a piece of paper and some logbook to get your merchandise back. They wanted to meet Jeffrey at a gas station, a secluded gas station in the middle of nowhere in St. Clair, Missouri. Jeffrey knew that something was off, so he tried to get a pastor or somebody neutral to go with him, and he was unable to. So what he did was he was on the phone with the mother of his children. He also had a watch on his left wrist that was recording everything. And this was actually a fact that was not known until well into the trial, and Jeffrey was actually had a video of the incident. Jeffrey was on the phone with the mother of his children, and he is on his way. You see him in his video. He gets out of the car, and he doesn't make it very far. He only makes it a couple feet. Within 13 seconds after stepping out of the car, Jeffrey is shot twice in the head and twice in the chest, and he's laying on the ground. Miraculously, he lives.
How's it going, Jeff?
Good, how are you?
You got the gun for him.
Why did I got the gun? What you got the gun for?
Because I'm an authorized gun.
All right, well, I'm authorized to
get down on the ground.
Get down on the ground.
You're going to have to shoot me, man.
I know that this is my bar card and driver's license, and I got a card for you, too. We were a couple of lawyers from St. Louis that Jeff's family came down and talked to us about what happened out here the other night.
Execution, you mean?
Well, that's what they're saying.
That's
exactly
what the fuck it was.
And you said you saw it go down?
I was standing right there where my truck is parked, exactly where it's parked right now.
Is that right?
Yep, and I was facing this way, and after I heard the first shot, it was pow, 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 pow. After I heard the first shot, I turned around, a man was falling towards me with his hands up, facing me, and a cop straight behind him, and he shot him fucking as he was going down.
Was his gun in his holster still?
I never seen a gun.
Oh, you never saw a gun?
I never seen a gun, period.
So not whenever he has hands up?
No. Okay. No. I can say, I cannot swear the man did not have a gun. I can swear the man did not have a gun in his hands.
Is that right? And you said he had his hands up like this?
He felt like this. And man that was with me will tell you the same thing, and I done talked to him, and I give you his phone number. You can get a statement from him, too.
Was he being mouthy with the cops?
I never heard nothing.
Really?
All I heard was shooting. I mean, I'm hard of hearing, okay?
Yeah.
From starters, but I never heard cops. I never heard nobody say stop, freeze, police. I never heard nothing. All I heard was pow, 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 pow.
How many cops were there?
How many what?
How many cops were there?
There was two cops over here, and there was two cops parked where that red blazer is right now, except for they was over this way a little bit. And my guy, actually, I was here to put that gutter up. See where that gutter's busted on this end, that board?
Yeah.
That's what I was here for, okay? Well, I pulled up where I'm pulled up now, and I waited about a minute, and I'm waiting, and I couldn't see in the car. I seen a silhouette of one guy in the car in front of me, okay? Yeah. So I told my buddy Steve, I said, Steve, get out and ask these fuckers to move so I can get my so I can get done, you know?
I didn't know
they was cops, okay? So my buddy gets out, he knocks on the window, he says, hey, can you guys back up? We got to put a gutter up here. And the guy says, sure, no problem. So he proceeds to back up, and he backs up, and he points over this way. You can see the orange marks where he parked at over there.
Okay.
Well, he backed up. I got out. Steve got out. My buddy Steve got in the back of the truck and handed me the gutter out. I set the gutter on the ground. That's when the shooting started.
Okay. And so how many shots did you hear?
4 to 6.
4 to 6.
Yep.
And so
I'm a minimum of 4, a maximum of 6. I heard a pow, 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 like that.
Yeah. Did you see, after they shot him, did you see the cops trying to help him out at all? We know they eventually called the ambulance, but,
This makes me think this was such a setup. Within 30 seconds, this fucking parking lot was full of fucking cops. Within 30 seconds.
Is that right?
I mean, yeah. Within 30 seconds.
Did they look like local guys, or were
they
feds?
These two guys were in plain clothes. These two guys were in plain clothes. When these two guys got out of the car, they put on vests that said FBI.
Wow.
These two guys over here was gone like that. They was whisked away, gone. And I seen them right before they left. I seen one of them standing right here next to some kind of vehicle. It wasn't an ambulance or nothing, but the one guy that actually I seen do the shooting was standing right here, and he was getting his hands taped up. Why they's taping his hands up, I have no idea, but they was taping his hands up with, you know, that box tape, that clear box tape cardboard boxes up with? They was taping his hands up with that, and they was gone.
That could be for the gunshot, the residue from the gunshot.
But, I mean, it was just literally split. The two guys that did the shooting, I never seen him again. And then it was just infested. I mean, just infested with cops.
How long until the ambulance got here? Did you stick around or did you?
Yeah,
get
I was here. They made me stay around and make a statement. I say the ambulance was here unusually fast.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, like, if somebody got hurt here, I'd never seen an ambulance get here that quick.
Is that right?
It's like everybody was just waiting for this to go down. Yeah. You know.
How? Let me ask you something. So you said that your friend was with, or the guy that was working with
yeah.
you. What's his name?
Steve Everhart.
Steve Everhart.
Yep.
Need
to talk to that person across the street too.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you the same thing. Man did not have a gun in his hand.
Yeah. You don't have Steve's phone number, do you?
Yeah, sure do.
Do you?
I just talked to him. I asked him if I give you some, and he said, yeah, him call him.
Okay.
I'll grab a notebook, if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Let him grab a notebook. And so, I mean, we, you know, it sounds like that.
It sounds like murder.
Well, I don't disagree with you. You know, we're trying to piece together what happened as well. And we know that Jeff, you know, did you know Jeff before this?
I never
happened?
Met the man, never heard of the okay. man. I don't know him from Adam.
Okay. And we, you know.
He can be a nutcase from hell as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. None of my business. What I'm concerned about is this was murder.
Yeah. And I mean, even, you know, we know that he was a bit of a rabble rouser
well,
around
fine,
here.
You know, this is America, man.
Yeah,
you know,
you can't shoot people.
No, you can't shoot people because yeah. you don't like what they do.
After being shot twice in the head, twice in the chest, Jeffrey lives. That's an absolute miracle in and of itself. Shortly after Jeffrey's release from the hospital, instead of being able to get the therapy that he needs and be able to have his ordeal over after being shot four times, Jeffrey was brought up on charges by prosecuting attorney Robert Parks, who, based on the shooting officer's word alone, brought Jeffrey up on charges of attempting to shoot the officer and armed criminal action. In court, there was not one single scrap of evidence that was produced on Jeffrey's behalf, and there was actually quite a bit of evidence available even at the time of trial for Jeffrey's innocence. The biggest piece of evidence alone would have been two FBI agents that were present. They actually saw what happened, and they gave depositions afterwards to Robert Parks, our Franklin County prosecuting attorney, where they swore in their depositions that they could see Jeffrey's hand at the time of the shooting, and then he had nothing in them. One of the FBI agents actually swore in his deposition that he ran over after he saw the shooting officer, Sergeant Henry James Folsom, shoot Jeffrey and saw Jeffrey fall. He said that he ran over to him and he saw Sergeant Henry James Folsom pulling a holster out from underneath Jeffrey with a gun in it. That was the first time that this man had ever seen a gun. He did not even know the gun was involved, and he could see Jeffrey's hand when Jeffrey was shot. That right there exonerates Jeffrey. That was taken off of the witness list, these FBI's agents' testimony, after Robert Parks, our Franklin County prosecuting attorney, heard them, because he knew that that would clear Jeffrey. There was also a plethora of evidence, which is still available on the internet. It was at the time of the trial that would have cleared Jeffrey. But it was all withheld from court, and that was knowingly and maliciously to sway the trial to convict Jeffrey Winehouse. There has not been one piece of evidence to date that has been able to contradict the evidence that has been put together that Jeffrey is innocent. And in court, Jeffrey was never even accused of pulling his trigger. Now, you've heard a witness state that it was an execution. You've heard a witness state that Jeffrey had nothing in his hands. So you have two FBI depositions that swear there is nothing in his hands. Another interesting thing to point out right now is that Sergeant Henry James Folsom, and this is a fact that was not allowed to be put in trial, Sergeant Henry James Folsom was actually looked at for a previous shooting where the exact same words were used, that he had to eliminate somebody as a threat. So there's a previous death in a questionable shooting by the same officer, and that wasn't even put into trial. But as a recap of the story, a troop that was not even belonging in Franklin County came and knocked on Jeffrey's door, and they took his computers. Now, Jeffrey got a call that he was going to get his computers back. At that point in time, Jeffrey has won. There is no point at that point for him to take an arsenal of weapons and assault the highway patrol. There is no point for him to whip into that parking lot and come at him like Rambo and say, "You gotta shoot me, man." Jeffrey won. He exposed what was happening. He got his computers back after they were legally taken, and he won. When he pulled in, the trunk was popped. They were supporting the ruse that Jeffrey was going to get his computers back. Instead, they shot him. Franklin County needs to know what happened, and so does the rest of the world. Jeffrey is sitting in a prison in Bon Terre, Missouri, on a 30-year prison sentence. Jeffrey will live the rest of his life in prison for a crime that he did not commit if somebody does not reach in and stop this. Jeffrey has an appeal that is sitting on the desk of governor. Has gone through the last governor. We have reported this to Hawley, to the president, to every organization under the sun. Everybody wants to pass the buck to somebody else and say that is not their problem, but Jeffrey is every one of our problem. He is an innocent man that was gunned down in a parking lot by the Missouri State Highway Patrol after he exposed things that people weren't comfortable with. We may not have always agreed with his views and the way he came across things, but as you heard the witness state, this is America. We have the right to free speech. And if the freedom of speech and press is limited, there is no freedom at all. There will be some links in the description to some sites that you can visit and learn a little bit more about Jeffrey, and I encourage you to do that. His story really is important, and it's something that could happen to any one of us that decides to stand in that gap. And when you stand alone, the courage that it takes to do that is something that not a lot of people have, but those kind of people are necessary to keep those checks and balances in place. And when you have the courage to do that, generally, you put a pretty big target on your back. And Jeffrey was lucky enough to live through this. Other people haven't. Jeffrey is still alive, and he still does need a voice. And I encourage you to learn more about his story. I encourage you to get involved and be a voice for Jeffrey. I am going to leave you with one final thought. I'm going to let you watch the video of Jeffrey being shot one last time. And then I'm going to play for you the dispatch call that was caught after Jeffrey was shot as they reported his shooting. And you're going to see exactly how they looked at the situation by that. I hope that you've heard this with open ears, and I hope that you decide to make a stand for Jeffrey today. Peace and blessings.
How's it going, Jeff?
Good, how are you?
You got the gun for
him. Why did I got the gun? What you got the gun for?
Because I'm an authorized to have a gun.
All right, well, I'm authorized to
get
have
down on the ground.
Get
down on the ground.
You're going to have to shoot me, man.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a Jeffrey Winehouse guy. You familiar with that name?
Oh, no. They're messing with him again?
Yeah. Maybe he learned his lesson this time. I don't know.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, that's Franklin County. All right.
All right, there you go. We have two more clips to play. The second one is our friend Rudy Davis is calling the Missouri Governor Mike Parson's office, asking him to pardon Jeffrey Winehouse.
All right, let's call the governor's office for Jeffrey Winehouse. His name is Governor Mike Parson. He recently got put in because the previous one, Eric Greitens, was stringing up naked women and tying them up and taking pictures of them and blindfolding them and all kinds of sexual scandal and scandalous stuff. So let's call this new one. He claims to be a Christian. Let's call him.
Governor Parson's office, please hold.
Okay. Hi, this is Governor Parson office?
Yes.
Great. My name is Rudy Davis. I'm a friend of Jeffrey Winehouse, and I just got to call you and tell you about him. I was hoping to relay some points about his case that you may have not considered. I'm very familiar with this case, and I've talked to him many times.
Okay.
Would you mind if I relayed some points to you so at least you're aware of it?
That's fine.
Okay, great. All right, there's 10 points, and I'll go through them very quickly, and I don't know if you have a pencil or paper, I could email them to you, but they're very quick. You know about the website Free Jeff Now, freejeffnow.com. It was put up by some of his supporters. And there's a second website called Year of Jubilee. Jubilee is spelled with one E, just like it is in the King James Bible. There's no two E's. Yearofjubilee.com, where there's been a page set up for Jeffrey that has a tremendous amount of information. And the third thing is, I'm sure you guys have seen the video where he gets shot, and you guys know that he was praying, and he was reading Psalms, and he had his wife on the phone before he went to go meet the two U.S. Marshals. And they're the ones that lied to him and said, you know, come pick up your computers. He didn't, like, search them out. I mean, they could have said, meet him at the police station, right? They could have said, meet him at anywhere. But they said they decided to meet him in this field by this, you know, grocery store. And he thought he was going to pick up his computers. That's why he backed up his car to theirs, because he was going to lift the hood of his car. Of course, the first thing they did is ask him why he was having a gun, but it's not illegal to carry a gun. So I'm sure you guys have seen that video, but I hope you have seen it. I just wanted, that was my third thing. And then the fourth thing I wanted to mention to you guys is that there was a bullet in the ground right near his head. I mean, so that means they had to shoot him while he was on the ground, and that matches up perfectly with the testimony of eyewitness Marty Leach. And I even have, like, discovery evidence where they have a picture of the bullet on the ground right near his head. Now, if he was shot standing up, there wouldn't be a bullet, you know, where he was laying on the ground. And that's, there was actually a photograph of the bullet near his head. The other thing, the point number five, is that Sergeant Henry Folsom, this whole thing boils down to credibility. Do you believe Jeffrey Winehouse's side of the story, or do you believe the two U.S. Marshals? Well, there's also the eyewitness Marty Leach, and if I have that audio that we received from his wife, who had a copy of the discovery evidence, and Marty Leach said that he was shot and he did not have a gun in his hand. I mean, Marty Leach, who has no reason to pick either one side, he said he did not have a gun in his hand. And Sergeant Henry Folsom, the man who I believe lied, in his deposition, he said that he told Jeffrey to get his gun, his hand off the gun. But yet, if you listen to the audio tapes, nowhere does he say that. So Sergeant Henry Folsom, his credibility is already shot. And there was two FBI agents. There was two FBI agents at the scene as well, and they also gave depositions. And they said that they didn't see a gun in Jeffrey's hands. The only people who said that Jeffrey pulled his gun is Scott Mertens and Sergeant Henry Folsom. So you have to ask whether you believe Jeffrey's side of the story or Sergeant Henry Folsom. But there's also evidence that he had a parachute holster. And his parachute holster, you can't pull the gun.
Hey, sir, just yep. One moment. I've got another line ringing.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
All right. Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I appreciate you listening to this. I know this is, you're a very busy woman, and I understand that, and I respect that. It's just that Jeffrey's going to be sitting 30 years in prison, so I have to, you know, when I stand before my creator, I have to say that I did everything I could to share the truth. But so we mentioned the fact that he had a parachute holster. Those holsters are designed to keep your gun on, you know, in your holster when you jump out of an airplane. They're very difficult to pull from, and he just simply didn't have the time to pull his gun out in the time frame that Sergeant Henry Folsom said. There's also in the video that, if you break down, it's, you know, like 1/30th of a frame. In the video, there's a reflection of his gun on his left side, but Sergeant Henry Folsom testified that his gun was on his right side. That's yet another credibility issue that goes to Sergeant Henry Folsom and, you know, his credibility and his testimony. Let's not forget that Marty Leach was an eyewitness to the whole thing, and we have the interview of Marty Leach, and he said he did not have a gun in his hand. These are Marty Leach's words, not mine. He said he was set up, murdered, and he was shot while he was going down, which means that you had to shoot, you know, from an above angle, and that matches up perfectly with there being a bullet in the ground near his head. I mentioned the two FBI depositions, which, you know, we do have those depositions, and both FBI agents said that they did not see a gun in Jeffrey's hand. And then the last thing that I wanted to share with you is when he went to court, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they put a shock collar on Jeffrey Winehouse, and they said, if you say anything out of line, we're going to push this button and it will electrocute you. And the warning label said that it could make him piss and defecate himself, and it could cause excruciating pain. That just seems crazy. I mean, that's so crazy that, you know, you probably wouldn't believe me but if you check it out, that's one of the points that his lawyer, Warren Markowitz, Jeffrey's lawyer, is trying to use to get a new trial. And so it's crazy they put a shock collar on him in the middle of trial. I would offer you this in closing statements, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to share this with you. When he makes the decision whether to pardon Jeffrey Winehouse, he's going to have to look at the credibility of the two U.S. Marshals, Scott Mertens and Sergeant Henry Folsom. I believe that we can prove they lied during their deposition, or the credibility of Jeffrey Winehouse, who was putting out bulletins exposing corruption. But we also have the eyewitness testimony of the two FBI agents, the bullet in the ground, and Marty Leach. Not only that, but when he evaluates this, he may think of it like, you know, if he picks Jeffrey Winehouse to pardon him, which I believe he sincerely deserves a pardon and should not sit in prison for 30 years. He's already been in prison for 7+ years, separated from his wife and his family. But if he picks Jeffrey Winehouse to pardon, I believe one of the challenges that this governor will face is it's going to put him against law enforcement. But, you know, the thing is that we can't let law enforcement go around, and unaccountably shoot people. So I just think that I hope he has the courage to do what's right. And I hope, he gives a pardon to Jeffrey Winehouse. And I hope he just goes with the facts rather than just siding with law enforcement.
Sure.
Okay. And if there's any questions, you mind if I give you my phone number?
That's fine.
972-839-9848. 972-839-9848. And my name is Rudy.
If you wish to block any future calls of this nature. Rudy, I will get the message passed forward.
Thank you so much. And your name was?
You're welcome. My name is Taylor.
Thank you, Taylor.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
And you know that the message didn't go anywhere. You could hear in her voice she could have cared less. And that's just being honest. Last clip, you're going to hear from the man himself, Jeffrey Winehouse. This is actually from yesterday. And it was his 3,615th day of being a political prisoner. And Jeffrey Winehouse, this is only about 2 minutes long. I'll read a little bit of scripture. And he's since, you know, we talked about earlier in 2018, he was not allowed to post these things online. He's since been reversed. And our friend Rudy Davis has been helping him post these messages quite often. And this is the latest one. Again, this is from yesterday, September 25th, 2022.
Good day, everybody. Jeff Winehouse coming from the Voluntary Missouri Prison Eastern Reception Diagnostic and Corrections Center, where I've been held captive for too many days. It's getting old, my friends. It's no fun being an illegal alien. Oh, my goodness gracious. I appreciate you tuning in. I'm in the book of Isaiah, chapter 11 yesterday is what we did, and today we're going to do chapter 12. And it goes like this, and in that day thou shalt say, O Lord, I will praise thee, for thou was angry with me. Thy anger is turned away, thou comfortest me. No, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be ashamed. I will trust and not be afraid, for the Lord Jehovah is my strength and my song. He also has become my salvation. Therefore, with joy shall we draw waters, shall you draw water out of the wells of salvation. In that day shall you say, praise the Lord, call upon his name, declare his doings among the people, make mention that his name is exalted. Sing unto the Lord, for he has done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. Cry out and shout, thou inhabitant of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee.
Great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee. Are you saved? Do you know the Lord Jesus Christ, your personal Lord and Savior? Not one of us will promise tomorrow. Today is the day of salvation. Confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus Christ. Believe in your heart, God raised him from the dead, and he's alive today. Repent and turn from your sins. Realize you're a sinner in need of a Savior. You're the sinner. He's the Savior. Accept Jesus while you still have that chance. God bless you. Have a good day. Continue to pray for us.
There you go. And our thanks again to Rudy Davis for everything he does. His website and the story focusing on Jeffrey Winehouse will be embedded in the show description. So check that out. Thanks again for all your continued support. God bless each and every one of you. Keep your head on a swivel. We'll get back to a regular programming here in the next week or two. In the meantime, if I come across something, I'll certainly post it. And for all things Fact Hunter, it's thefacthunter.com and email thefacthunter@mail.com. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your week. Until next time, my friends, keep your head on a swivel, and we'll see you again real soon.
Listening to the Fact Hunter Radio Network.
Just the facts, ma'am.